So, on June 4th, 2026, an AI quietly indexed your coding habits for free. A consumer chatbot autonomously bought your dinner using Face ID, and a rocket landed on a drone ship in the Pacific while, another one launched about 2,500 miles away.
All in the exact same day.
Right. Welcome to the deep dive. We are unpacking this massive stack of news from the June 2026 Technology and AI Intelligence briefing today. And we're looking at this really highly concentrated 24-hour window where basically six distinct technology breakthroughs just crashed into each other.
Yeah, it was a pretty wild day for tech news, honestly.
It really was. And the goal here is simple, right? We want to give you, the listener, the ultimate shortcut to being the absolute most well-informed person in your next meeting.
Exactly.
Because we are tracking a very specific transition today. It's that exact moment when bleeding edge tech stops being, a series of cool, highly visible experimental demos and officially dissolves into just the invisible, ubiquitous infrastructure of your life.
Yeah, it's that shift from actively managing your technology to just blindly relying on it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think about municipal water pressure when you turn on a faucet.
Right, you just expect water.
Exactly. And we are finally hitting that exact threshold with autonomous systems.
Which is crazy to think about. But before we look at how we actually interact with AI, we first really need to look at how its fundamental brain, right, and its hands are evolving in real time. So OpenAI rolled out their new dreaming architecture for ChatGPT, and they pushed persistent memory to all free tier users.
Which is huge. It fundamentally changes the entire compute economics of large language models.
Okay, let's unpack this because the legacy system of memory was just incredibly brute force, right?
Oh, completely. I mean, historically, every time you open a new chat, the system essentially had amnesia.
Right.
And if you had like custom instructions set up, it was just silently prepending those instructions to your prompt over and over, which was eating up your token limits.
So it was basically just shoving your raw, messy chat logs into the context window and burning massive amounts of compute on every single interaction.
Precisely. And that brute force method used to cost OpenAI roughly 2 cents per user per month.
2 cents, which doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, for a paying plus subscriber, yeah, it's negligible. But when you apply that 2 cents to over 100 million free users,
Oh, wow.
yeah, the server costs become an absolute hemorrhage. It's unsustainable.
So this new dreaming architecture solves this by mimicking human sleep consolidation, which is just a fascinating concept to me.
It really is.
The system isn't just keeping a transcript of everything you've ever typed anymore. It actually runs a background process, this so-called dreaming phase, that continuously analyzes your conversation patterns.
Right. It extracts the semantic vectors and compresses them.
Exactly. Like if you frequently prompt it to write TypeScript and you aggressively correct it when it doesn't use inline documentation, the dreaming process extracts that specific behavioral preference, maps it, and just cements it into this highly compressed user persona.
And the math behind that compression is where the real breakthrough lies. By shifting from raw text recall to this semantic indexing, they achieved a massive 5x compute efficiency gain.
Five times more efficient.
Yeah, they drove the cost down from 2 cents to less than half a cent per user per month. I mean, it's drastically cheaper to query a dense vector map of your preferences than it is to reprocess thousands and thousands of words every single time you hit enter.
And the crazy part is that performance actually improves. The briefing noted that recall accuracy jumped from 65% to 87%.
It's a massive leap.
It is. It's reliably pulling hyper-specific details from conversations you had like weeks ago. Free users get a 90-day rolling retention of this vector map. And plus, users, the ones paying $20 a month, get unlimited retention. But giving this to the free tier, that's an aggressive play.
What's fascinating here is the strategic why behind it. This isn't just OpenAI being generous, right? It is a deliberate ecosystem trap,
A trap for who?
specifically aimed at Google Gemini.
Oh, interesting.
Because Gemini has offered some persistent memory features for a while now, but OpenAI is leveraging their massive user base to create these basically insurmountable psychological switching costs.
Right, because the friction of leaving just becomes way too high. I mean, if you migrate to Anthropic's Claude or to Gemini, you are starting over with a complete blank slate.
Exactly. You have to endure weeks of retraining a brand new model on how you format your deployment scripts or, the exact tone you prefer in client emails.
So the stickiness isn't a subscription fee anymore.
No, the stickiness is the sheer convenience of a machine that already knows exactly how you think.
Yeah.
They are building a massive data flywheel, The more you use it, the more accurately it maps your preferences, which makes you less likely to leave, which just feeds it more data.
Man, that is smart. So OpenAI is really locking in the persistent brain. But, you know, a brain that just talks to you is essentially just a very fast consultant.
Right. It can't actually do anything.
Exactly. To actually become invisible infrastructure, it needs hands. It needs to execute. And on the exact same day, Elon Musk's XAI dropped Grok build 0.1 via their public API.
Yes. And this is a direct shot at the $10 billion AI coding market.
And we should clarify, this is not a legacy autocomplete tool like we've seen before.
Not at all. I mean, legacy tools like the early versions of GitHub Copilot, they were strictly reactive.
Mm-hmm.
They lived inside your IDE, they watched your cursor, and they basically just guessed the next 10 lines of code.
Like a really smart spell checker.
Exactly. They were brilliant syntax engines, but they completely lacked agency.
But Grok Build is an agentic workflow manager. I mean, the stats in the briefing are nuts. We are talking about an 89.7% score on the Human Evil benchmark,
which is industry leading right now.
Right. And more importantly, a 43.2% on SWE bench. It is actively resolving real-world bug tickets on complex GitHub repositories.
Yeah, and it's doing that because it has a 128,000 token context window, which means it's holding the entire architecture of, like, a medium-sized repository in its working memory simultaneously.
Which drastically reduces the model hallucinating non-existent dependencies. Yes, right?
Exactly. But, you know, the benchmark scores are impressive and all. But the mechanism that actually allows Grok to act autonomously is its native integration with the Open Model Context Protocol.
The MCP.
Right, MCP.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the critical piece, isn't it? Because a super smart model stuck in a browser window can't deploy server.
No, it can't. MCP acts as the universal bridge. It standardizes how the model accesses your local and remote environments.
Okay, so how does that actually look in practice?
Well, through MCP, Grok Build can securely read your local file system, it can query your live PostgreSQL database, write a migration script, and then actually push it to your deployment pipeline. XAI essentially built this skeleton key that fits into any existing developer stack.
Mm.
By embracing open protocols, Grok is becoming the Switzerland of AI coding.
Right. They are actively avoiding the walled garden approach, the whole vendor lock-in that Microsoft took with the Copilot ecosystem.
Yeah, they are prioritizing market disruption over short-term profits here. They price the API super aggressively.
Yeah, $2 per million input tokens and $10 per million output tokens. That severely undercuts Anthropic and OpenAI.
Oh, absolutely.
And the briefing mentioned this one beta tester that blew my mind. They used Grok Build to refactor a 15-year-old Java monolith into a modern microservices architecture.
Right, and how long did it take?
3 weeks.
Yeah.
That is a multi-month project for an entire team of senior engineers. And it was reduced to a single dev, basically just supervising an autonomous junior developer with a photographic memory and infinite patience.
It's wild. They are completely commoditizing the execution layer of software engineering. When the cost of generating and deploying all that boilerplate infrastructure drops to near zero, the value entirely shifts to the architectural design.
And the user experience.
Hmm.
Which honestly brings up a glaring problem, because having a super smart brain and capable hands is totally useless if the average person can't intuitively interact with it. Exposing an open MCP server or an API terminal, that's fine for a senior developer.
Right, they know what they're doing.
But if you try to hand an autonomous agent to the average consumer, it just fails completely. The friction of authentication, of trying to securely link credit cards to chatbots, it has always killed consumer AI agents.
Yeah, we have massive back-end execution power right now, but our front-end access is just totally broken. We are severely bottlenecked by the UX, the user interface.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because that friction is exactly what Apple just eliminated by finally opening up their walled garden. They opened iMessage to autonomous agents. Right. They approved Poke, which is built by Genie AI, as the very first third-party agent on Apple Messages for Business. And it's an autonomous conversational commerce agent.
And the reason Poke is actually working, where a decade of those chat-to-buy bots completely failed, is the native integration with Apple Pay via Face ID and Touch ID.
It's the killer feature.
It really is. The historical failure of conversational commerce wasn't the AI being dumb, it was the payment gateway.
Yeah, because if a bot recommended a product, you still had to, like, click a link, open a clunky web view, create an account, and manually type in a 16-digit credit card number.
And nobody wants to do that on their phone.
Nobody. But TechCrunch tested Poke, and the workflow is completely frictionless. They just texted the agent an iMessage. Find me a good Italian restaurant near Pier 39 with availability tonight at 7 p.m. for 4 people.
And Poke just queries the OpenTable API, right?
Exactly. It drops 3 nicely formatted options right into the text thread. The user taps one, and Poke books it. If the restaurant requires a deposit, or, you know, say you ask Poke to order delivery from Chipotle, you just double-click the side button of your iPhone.
And Face ID authenticates you instantly.
It takes less than 45 seconds from the first prompt to a confirmed, fully paid reservation. All inside iMessage.
And the mechanism there is so crucial for establishing trust. Face ID doesn't just hand the AI your raw credit card number.
Right.
It generates a highly secure, one-time biometric token that authorizes the transaction in the background. So the user never leaves the chat thread, and the AI never touches your actual financial data.
And the business pays, what, between 15 and 50 cents per conversation?
Yeah, which they will gladly pay.
Oh, for sure.
Because the conversion rate on a biometric, zero-friction transaction like that is going to be astronomical compared to standard mobile web traffic.
It really is a foundational shift for Apple. They are moving away from that closed Siri monopoly, and they're quietly acknowledging that Siri just cannot be the universal agent for every single highly specialized task.
Exactly. Instead, Apple is positioning iMessage as this secure, curated sandbox. They are leveraging their 300 million business users to basically become the ultimate arbiter of third-party AI quality. They control the authentication layer, and they let startups like Genie AI handle this specialized execution.
It's brilliant. But, you know, relying on Apple to solve the interface problem isn't enough for everyone, which leads to this massive surprise announcement from Brian Chesky.
Yeah, the Airbnb CEO.
Right. He is launching an independent, completely self-funded AI research lab. And the crazy part is he is entirely ignoring core AI models.
He's not buying GPUs to build a better LLM.
Not at all. The lab is exclusively focused on interaction design. He's arguing that current chatbots are basically just SMS interfaces and voice assistants are glorified phone trees.
And he's right. He's addressing the exact UX crisis we just talked about. We're taking these revolutionary, non-deterministic reasoning engines and we're cramming them into a chat UI from the 1990s.
I understand the critique, I really do, but I have to play the skeptic here.
Sure.
Why is a hospitality CEO the guy to fix AI design? Shouldn't a machine learning engineer from DeepMind or OpenAI be doing this?
This raises an important question, actually, because you have to look at what Airbnb fundamentally achieved to understand why Chesky is uniquely qualified for this.
Okay.
Because Chesky didn't solve a technical problem. He solved a human trust problem. I mean, getting a human being to comfortably allow an absolute stranger to sleep in their spare bedroom, that goes against every instinct of personal security we have.
Right. It sounds insane on paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he solved that entirely through interaction design. Use mandatory verified identities, two-way review systems, high-quality professional photography, clear escrow guarantees.
Oh, I see. So he designed a UX framework that essentially manufactured trust between strangers.
Exactly. And AI is currently facing that exact same trust deficit. When an agent like Poke or Grok is operating autonomously, actually spending your money or deploying your code, you need a profound level of trust.
Right.
Right now, the big AI labs, they build the technical capability first, and then they just slap a text box on it as an afterthought.
Which is why people don't trust it.
Yes. Chesky is inverting that priority. Design first, technical capability second. His lab will ask, what specific visual and interactive feedback loops do humans require to actually trust an autonomous system?
So instead of just a chat box, maybe the agent provides like a visual reasoning receipt or a staging area where it shows its exact proposed steps before it executes anything, mimicking that Airbnb escrow model.
Precisely. Once they build those design frameworks and interaction libraries, they will bend the underlying technology to fit the interface, not the other way around.
That makes total sense. But, you know, while Chesky is trying to build these beautiful, trustworthy interfaces to make us love AI, we really have to acknowledge that some people are just absolutely exhausted.
Oh, the feature fatigue is real.
It is. Some users don't want a better AI interface. They just want the AI entirely removed from their software. The tech industry is just cramming AI into every single product.
Which has triggered a very real, very vocal demand for absolute minimalism.
So what does this all mean? Enter Brave Origin. This is a new web browser from Brave Software, and it is aggressively contrarian.
Yeah, it's a fascinating product.
It really is. They are charging a one-time fee of $60, and in exchange, they completely strip out their own Leo AI assistant, they rip out the Bat crypto rewards system, and they remove the crypto wallet.
It's a completely sanitized, lightweight browser, and it includes a built-in VPN, which normally costs, what, $10 a month?
Yeah, exactly. And the results are pretty clear. RAM usage drops by 15% and page load speeds increase by 8%. But my initial reaction to this was pure skepticism. Wait, so what does this all mean? We are now paying a $60 premium to have features actively taken away from us.
I know, it sounds crazy.
It sounds like paying a premium for a dumb TV just because smart TVs are too annoying. It feels completely backward.
It does feel counterintuitive, but you have to look at the actual economics of the privacy market. It operates on a principle of VPN arbitrage.
Okay, break that down for me.
So if you are the type of privacy-conscious user who already pays for a standalone VPN, which, as you said, averages about $10 a month, Brave Origin includes that deeply integrated VPN at the network level.
Oh, I see.
Right. So that $60 upfront cost essentially pays for itself in just 6 months of canceled VPN subscriptions.
That's a great point.
And Brave guarantees updates for a minimum of 3 years. So it targets this specific 5 to 10% niche of privacy purists who are just suffering from feature bloat fatigue.
It completely inverts the modern SaaS model, doesn't it? I mean, for the last decade, the assumption has been that software is free and you pay for it by allowing the company to harvest your data, serve you ads, or eat up your local compute power.
Exactly. Brave Origin is offering a clean trade. Give us $60 once, and we will give you your CPU cycles and your attention span back. It proves that there is a tangible market premium for pure minimalism. Digital silence is now a premium commodity.
Digital silence. I like that.
Yeah, as digital infrastructure becomes more complex and autonomous, a measurable percentage of the market will gladly pay to have that infrastructure just stay completely out of their way.
Which perfectly sets up the final piece of this 24-hour window. Yeah. Because if Brave Origin represents our desire for digital infrastructure to become invisible and quiet, SpaceX just demonstrated how our physical infrastructure is doing the exact same thing, but at an unprecedented scale.
Yeah, because the digital routing required for agents like Grok and Poke to function globally,
right. It
relies entirely on physical hardware in low Earth orbit.
Right.
And SpaceX just achieved an operational cadence that completely redefines physical infrastructure.
This blew my mind. They launched two Falcon 9 rockets a mere 18 hours and 57 minutes apart.
Less than a day.
Less than 19 hours. But the staggering part isn't just the time gap. It's the geography. The first launch went up from Vandenberg in California, and the second launched from Cape Canaveral in Florida, opposite coasts. And both boosters, B11108 on its 10th flight, and B1090 on its 13th, both landed successfully on drone ships.
To understand the sheer complexity here, you really have to look at the logistics of parallelization. Operating a dual-coast launch window within a single day means SpaceX has completely eliminated the bottleneck of shared ground resources.
They aren't sharing a single mission control team that has to, sleep and reset between launches.
Exactly. They are running distinct parallel weather monitoring teams. They are coordinating completely separate airspace clearance operations with the FAA on opposite sides of the continent.
At the same time.
Yes. They have autonomous drone ships positioned and tracking telemetry in both the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans simultaneously.
And between those two rapid-fire launches, they deployed 53 Starlink satellites. That brings the active constellation to 6,200, which, according to the briefing, is 60% of all active satellites currently orbiting the Earth.
Operated by one company.
One company. Generating an estimated $6 to $8 billion in revenue from over 4 million subscribers. And they are targeting 144 launches in 2026. I mean, this isn't experimental rocketry anymore where everyone holds their breath during a countdown.
No, it's routine.
It operates like an airline schedule or like an industrial freight network.
It is the ultimate goal of all the technology we discussed today, really. It's becoming boring. SpaceX is doing for orbital payload delivery what Amazon Web Services did for server hosting.
Right.
It is turning something that used to require a national GDP into a boring, reliable, scheduled utility. They are no longer a startup. They are an industrial space giant. The rockets are basically just delivery trucks for the routing layer that powers everything else we've discussed today.
When you pull all of these sources together, the trajectory of this single day in June is just incredibly clear. I mean, we watched the AI brain secure persistent, highly efficient memory with ChatGPT's dreaming architecture. We saw it gain autonomous hands to execute complex code via Grok's integration with the OpenMCP.
We watched Apple finally open up its walled garden and use biometric tokenization to solve the friction of consumer AI payments with Poke.
Right, and we saw Brian Chesky prioritize trust and interaction design over raw capability, while Brave Origin proved that some of us will pay a premium just to be left completely alone. All of this happening while SpaceX runs a transcontinental rocket schedule to maintain the physical data layer that connects it all globally.
The transition really is complete. Why this matters to your life is that the 2020s started with tech as flashy, highly visible demos. But this week proves we've officially entered the era where these technologies just become the invisible infrastructure of your daily routine. You are interfacing with an ecosystem of autonomous agents running on ubiquitous infrastructure.
But, you know, as these tools slip into the background of our daily routines, I want to leave you with one final kind of provocative thought to mull over that none of these briefings explicitly answered.
Now, what is it?
Well, if AI memory is becoming persistent, right, and agents like Grok and Poke can execute autonomous financial and structural transactions on your behalf, and Starlink is seamlessly connecting it all globally, what happens to personal liability?
Ooh, that's a tricky one.
Right? If your autonomous agent executes a terrible, legally binding contract while you are purposely off the grid, happily enjoying your $60 AI-free minimalist browser, who is legally responsible, you or the machine that was supposed to know your preferences.
Wow. Yeah, once the infrastructure becomes invisible, it's very easy to forget it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if a pipe bursts behind the drywall, you still own the house.
Exactly. Something to keep in mind the next time your phone autonomously buys your dinner. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and as always, stay insanely curious.